Thank you very much, Jihan, for this brilliant lesson in recent South African history.
Well, thank you all for staying, and sorry for inflicting this on you after Marikana.
I mean, maybe you could start just talking about the kind of situation of production you were in when you were in South Africa, because you told me that you had to wait a long time for people to grab and really.
It took me about 4 years to make the film. And in the process of research, everyone I had interviewed doing research interviews, and everything was going fine. And then suddenly there were these scandals that started erupting. And I actually had to move to South Africa full time to actually understand what was going on. But then like about 6 or 7 months before Polokwane, everything shut down. It was all systems down. And I don't know why, but absolutely every interview we scheduled was canceled for many months. And Frank Kleeman, sitting right there, who was the DOP for the film, very kindly stood by me, and we decided to continue the film. But there was definitely a moment when there was a question of just, okay, let's throw away the 3-4 years of work and it can't be done. But actually, I haven't seen the film for quite a while, and I'd forgotten the cope bit. I must admit, because that was a tag on. So when I came in, the film was finishing. I was going to move ahead, and then the cope bit started. But it's actually interesting to see how the fundamental issue of the problem hasn't changed.
So, and when it came then to shooting, I mean, was there an amount of people who were just rejecting to be interviewed?
Oh, yeah.
Because, for example, Mbeki is hardly seen there.
No, I did get an interview with Mbeki, but Mbeki was at a very delicate moment of his life, I can imagine. And all I can remember is that he really wouldn't answer any questions. And my position was that, I actually remember exactly what I told him. I told him Amilcar Cabral didn't succeed, but his ideas continue. So I'm not asking you to tell me what is right and what is wrong. I just want to understand what your ideas were, at least in terms of the African Renaissance. There was no way. I remember his reaction to my question on the Renaissance. He started talking to me about cow culling in the, and I was like, what? But I do understand, but I definitely was very upset that he didn't give his side of the story in a way that I know he could have. Several other people that I'd met many times at filming, they couldn't. Joel Nechetenze, for example. Trevor Manuel was in there. Like, I met everyone many times, but actual filming, it was hard. Yeah.
So are there any questions from the audience? Okay.
At first, thank you for the film, and I apologize for putting a more technical question. I'm working from time to time with teachers, and I would like to use this lecture in South African history. So where can I get the film, and how can I get the film?
I'm flattered, but I'm not sure if I should be flattered at being a lecturer. I hope I wasn't lecturing you.
No.
Yes, distribution is the Achilles heel of African cinema, as Doris can tell you. I'm not sure where you can get the film, actually.
Really?
But I'll give you my card and I will send you a copy.
Okay.
So it's auto distribution.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello. What was your intention for making this film?
My intention was to understand the moment of transition. I'd made a film just before it called Cuba's African Odyssey, which is about the moment of independence, the moment of the struggle for independence. And looking, I mean, I've been working on decolonization for many, many years. And from my research, it was basically in that moment of transition that things seemed to fall apart. And so I felt that the ANC, being what I considered part of the traditional revolutionary movements of the 60s, that was going through the same process the rest of the African countries had gone through much earlier, that I thought it was very interesting to just follow that moment. I don't think 1994 was the transition. It was the beginning. The actual transition is when... disagrees. The moment for me, the moment for of transition is when succession starts happening internally. It's not just the transfer of power. So I wanted that. That's what I was interested in. And mainly my big question, which is I think the question in all my films, is what happened to the dream? Because I believe that many African leaders, we have many icons, not just Mandela, but there are many icons who had an amazing vision and at very difficult times. And the minute they succeed, what happened? What happened to that dream? So I think part of what I was trying to do is to follow the intricate process that through which we lose the dream without meaning to lose it. I think it's this confrontation between the concept and the dreams of a liberation movement with the reality of power, reality of daily power. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening. I would like to see a little bit forward. What comes after Zuma? What is your opinion? Who is now the next?
Okay. Where's my crystal ball? I really, really do not. I don't think that I'm the right person to answer such a question. I'm my heart's South African, but I'm not South African. I think there always is. I'm Egyptian, and in Egypt we spent many, many years saying, "Oh, but who else? What do we do?" You know, in a country of 45 million people, trust me, there must be people there who are qualified to do that job. But I think we're all stuck. I mean, most African countries are stuck in a system of power. And actually, my biggest question, I'm not going to do that film, but I'd like someone to do it. The real question is, to what extent can a liberation movement govern? Because that's not their qualifications. And I think that this question was never really, it just seems very disloyal to not have them govern. But I mean, I guess part of the reason, just to come back to your question, for me, South Africa was such an amazing dream. And I honestly thought that they have the hindsight. Like, there are 52 countries who've gone through this. And I think that this whole idea of the fact that it was a colonialism of a special kind, shadowed the possibility of them learning from lessons from other African countries who've gone through the exact same process. Of course, it's not apartheid, but again, I'll go back and say, well, Algeria went through the exact same process. The French in Algeria had a system very close to apartheid. So there were lessons there to allow South Africa to take a different route. but and I don't like believing in inevitability, but voila.
Any more questions? Okay.
I was just wondering what your opinion is of how much the truth and reconciliation process, the whole thing of absolving guilt, did play a part in making it very difficult for them to actually transform the country later.
I dare not speak with Mr. Netsebeza here. No, I think there's been quite an interesting discussion around this topic. But on a personal level, I think anything swept under the carpet comes back and, you'll allow me, bites you in the ass at some point. So that's to be very crude. And I think a lot was swept under the carpet. I understand why it was swept under the carpet. I understand why it was important. I understand why there might not have been other options, but it was still swept under the carpet. And we're living with it today, I think. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.